Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Hemp is being called America's next big cash crop. Pennsylvania farmers have certainly taken notice, but why the great interest? Can hemp replace other crops or help farmers who may be struggling? And why is hemp so valuable anyway? Joining us on today's program is Dr. Alyssa Collins, director of the Penn State Extension Southeast Agricultural Research and Extension Center. Dr. Collins, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Also joining us today is Mark O'Neill, director of Media and Strategic Communications with the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau. Mark, always good to see you.
You as well, Scott.
And joining us on the phone right now is hemp grower Scott Brown of Brown Hill Farms in Wyoming County. Mr. Brown, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You also can leave a question or a comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at SmartTalk WITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Dr. Alyssa Collins, let me start with you. I mean, I observe a real excitement about this crop. Why?
Yeah, so hemp is a crop that can be used in three different ways, basically. We've got a use that's for fiber, kind of like a flax or cotton. We've got use that's for its grain, kind of like a sorghum or other oil seeds. And then we've got a third use that is for the pharmaceutical aspects of this. So an oil called cannabidiol can be extracted and added to foods and healthcare products. So there's three different uses, and even from the three different uses, the industrial applications are ranging in the multitudes.
And we're going to be talking about a lot of those uses because, I mean, I actually saw a list that it was 500 or 5,000 different uses.
Yeah, so depending on the source you look at, anywhere from 2,500 to 5,000 uses.
Okay, I was going to say, I knew that when I first saw that quote, I was like, wow. I mean, I doubt that very many people know that. So, Mark O'Neill, here in Pennsylvania, as I said, there's an excitement about this. What about here in Pennsylvania?
Well, certainly there is an excitement, but there's also some caution as well. Certainly the opportunity to grow a new product that could potentially be a lucrative product obviously is something that a lot of farmers are very interested in, especially since some other crops which they've grown, the prices for them have been going down for five consecutive years, mainly corn and soybeans. So to find an alternative crop that potentially could be an economic driver for them obviously is very important. We also say that there is caution, and this is something we talk about as the show goes on, is just because the Farm Bill did remove industrial hemp from the Controlled Substances Act, that does not mean anyone can do whatever they want with hemp. There still is a lot of questions about potential new regulations or legislation that's going to be needed to approve at the federal level. And then obviously there's a state plan. Pennsylvania State Agriculture Department has already sent in a plan to the federal government looking for approval there. So we want to make sure that, yes, there's a lot of excitement, there's great potential with this crop, but it's not a get-rich-quick scheme, and people need to know as much information as they can as they move forward with this production of this crop.
All right, so let's clarify that one of the reasons that we're doing this program and that there is excitement is that 2018 Farm Bill that you mentioned made it such that hemp was no longer classified as in the same category as marijuana. And so basically it made it legal for farmers to grow hemp. Talk about that. What exactly did the Farm Bill do?
Well, as you mentioned, by taking it off that list, it opens the opportunity for it to be grown. But it doesn't. There were a lot of regulations involved with something being considered an illegal drug, at which there's some common sense things. But some other things are What farmers and investors are going to be concerned about is banking services. Obviously, it was illegal to go through banks to fund drugs. Now there has to be a setup of what procedures are there to utilize bank services. Also, interstate travel. Let's say each state gets their own individual plan approved where they can grow hemp and products and then produce them. Well, you want to sell them and you don't want to be limited just to Pennsylvania. So let's say you want to sell it to New Jersey and New York. Well, you have to be legally allowed to transport those products from this state to that state. These are things that need to be taken care of at the federal level. And whether that's through Congress passing legislation and getting it signed by the president, or whether it's through a regulatory process, which often can take a long time to do. And that's what a lot of the excitement and the people who are really excited about this thing need to keep in mind, because there could be delays that you're not expecting. We're all for it. We've had policy at Farm Bureau for industrial hemp for 20 years. So this is something that we've been interested in backing. But we want to make sure that everyone goes into this with open eyes.
Dr. Collins, the 2018 Farm Bill basically made industrial hemp legal to grow. But I want to go back to 2014, because that farm bill in 2014 did kind of open the door for educational purposes. Can you talk about that?
That's right. So the 2014 farm bill was one that allowed for research institutions to grow the crop in order to do science. And so as part of that, states were allowed to set up permit programs to accommodate experimentation, basically. So Penn State was one of the entities that did this when Pennsylvania allowed that to be legal in 2017. That's when the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture said, okay, we're going to set up a program so that we can learn more about this crop and how we're going to be able to grow it when it does become legal, so that we're not flying blind when we suddenly be able to grow this. And so in 2017 and 2018, that was something we were able to do as an institution, and we weren't the only ones. There were other universities and other entities that did research this crop. So we've been growing it for a few years now and have learned a few things, but we have many more questions.
Speaking of growing hemp, let's turn to Scott Brown of Brown Hill Farms in Wyoming County. Scott Brown is a hemp grower. Mr. Brown, how did you get involved with growing hemp?
I actually had a group approach me to do the growing for them. It was a group that had the permit last year. So they were looking for somebody in Wyoming County to grow.
Now, were you farming before this?
Oh, yes. I farmed all my life.
So what crops, what did you specialize on your farm?
We grow mostly corn and soybeans.
Okay. So when you were approached about growing hemp, what was your first thought? Was this, did you look at it as kind of an experiment, or did you look at this as possibility of another cash crop for you?
Both, I think. It was an opportunity for me to get our foot in the door here at the farm without getting a permit on our own, because we see the potential going down the road for this crop, so it was a really good way to get our foot in the door.
So give me a sense, if you will, how many acres you have planted and just exactly what you have to do to grow hemp.
Last year, I think we planted 37 acres.
Okay.
The group that I dealt with originally had planned on doing 25, I believe, and two varieties, and they ended up buying a little bit too much seed, so we just went ahead and did some more experiments. Last year, I probably ran 20 to 30 different seed population experiments and machine experiments. We planted with three different machines.
What, or should I say, where did you get your seeds?
the company that I dealt with sourced the seed.
Okay. Reason I asked that question is because this is something that has been regulated as well as to where you can obtain your seeds, some that are grown from seeds. In fact, Dr. Collins, I'll ask you some of the basic questions about this. And this may be the most basic of all. What is hemp?
So hemp is a broadleaf plant, and essentially it is the same species as marijuana that you may be familiar with. And just
some more
like,
familiar than others,
sure.
I am sure.
Yeah. And yeah. Just like apples have different varieties, you use a Granny Smith apple for baking and for things like that, whereas maybe you prefer a Honeycrisp for eating fresh. The same is true for most other plants. Sweet corn, same thing. It's a little bit different than field corn, and so we use it for different purposes. And hemp is like that. So the industrial hemp is the same species, but it's a different plant because it has different plant architecture. It grows a little bit differently depending on which kind it is. And it has a different chemical profile, just like the different chemical profile that gives apples their different flavors. So it is the same plant, essentially, but a different variety. And that's really important because the varieties that we use for industrial hemp don't have the levels of psychoactive compound that the marijuana varieties do. And so we can use them differently. So hemp is a lot of different things, and the way we grow it differs depending on what we're going to use it as an end product as. So, for instance, the fiber type of hemp, those plants get to be 16 feet tall, and they require special equipment to harvest. The plants that we use for grain, those, you know, maybe are only about 4 feet tall. And you can use a typical combine that you would use to harvest other types of grain. And then when we're talking about that third type that we use for the CBD oils, that type needs to be grown very differently from the other two. That type is grown more like we grow tobacco or tomatoes. And so it requires a lot more of an intensive agriculture. And so we're probably looking at something that's a much smaller acreage than those other two types. And so when a farmer says they're interested in growing hemp, one of the first things I ask them is, well, what kind? And then we go from there and talk about what they're going to need to be thinking about.
Here in Pennsylvania, what is the potential? I mean, I'm thinking along the lines of climate, soil, the kind of weather that we have here in the Northeast, the four seasons. Hopefully. But is this a versatile crop that can be grown in a climate like Pennsylvania widespread?
So it's been grown for many years in places like Canada, Europe, China, and we have no reason to believe that it won't grow well here as well. However, we need to do a lot of work to find out what the best varieties are. And what choices we as farmers need to make.
There may be some varieties mm-hmm. that grow better here than others.
That's right. And maybe planting dates are important, and probably harvest dates are important in a different way than they would be in a higher latitude like Canada. So we have a lot of that work still to do, even though we've started it. But we will be able to grow this here. Pennsylvania farmers are good at farming. And they're very resourceful, and so we'll learn all this together. But one thing we need to consider is all the work that needs to be done yet, and the answers that we don't have yet, and how that does put us a little bit at risk for putting a whole bunch of acreage in this state in at one time.
So do you look at this as that last statement you just made, that when you say we have to experiment and putting a lot of this in at one time, does that mean that we'll be cautious about this or should be cautious about it?
I think so. Farmers are used to taking risks. That's part of what farming is about. But a lot of farmers are looking at this crop now as a potential replacement for some of these crops that they're used to growing that are now a little bit lower in value. Dairy farmers are interested in finding something new. And all of that is really good, and we want to do a good job giving them the best information we have. but we're hesitant to tell folks to go full force with both feet into this until we know more information.
Scott Brown, were you going to say something? I thought I heard you there.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's okay.
I think before the 30s, which was when it became illegal to grow hemp, I think that was one of the leading crops in Pennsylvania was hemp.
So I think it was,
too,
yeah.
We do have a huge history of hemp growing in Pennsylvania. The varieties, of course, have changed. But it is going to be a challenge, I think, and in our climate here, especially north of Route 80, the climate to grow corn and soybeans is a marginal thing, and I think the hemp would fit in very nicely in our particular climate.
You know, just as an aside, think about all the townships and municipalities in Pennsylvania that you hear of: East Hempfield, Hempfield Township, Hempfield School District. There's a reason that they have those names. We're going to talk more about hemp and industrialized hemp in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We're talking about the expansion of industrial hemp. The 2018 Farm Bill approved in Washington gives the go-ahead for hemp to be legally grown, not just here in Pennsylvania, but other states as well. There are a lot of rules and regulations go along with that. It may be the next big cash crop or may not be, but we're talking about the different uses and what has to happen here in Pennsylvania with our guest, Dr. Alyssa Collins, Director of Penn State Extension Southeast Agricultural Research and Extension Center, Mark O'Neill, Director of Media and Strategic Communications with the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, and hemp grower Scott Brown of Brown Hill Farms in Wyoming County. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at @SmartTalkWITF. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's go to Ken in New Oxford. Ken, you're on the air.
Yes, I would like to first of all give credit to Governor Wolf's administration in actually 2016 when it became legalized. But this past year I was at the farm show and I met Les Stark, and I bought his book called Hempstead Heritage One, and that's a study of the early American homestead hemp industry as revealed by the wills of old Lancaster County. And that's from 1729 to 1845.
So we have a long history.
Oh, yes, and I think it's a win-win situation for the future of all of us. There's a much, much more benefit from hemp.
Thank you very much for your call. Dr. Collins, you recognize that name, Les Stark.
Yeah, Les Stark is a hemp historian right here in Pennsylvania, and so he's been at a few of our programs and has given us kind of some perspective on where we were with hemp so many centuries ago. So traditionally, it's been a crop that was used for fiber, so to make sailcloths and homespun fabric and ropes. Most of the ropes for all the ships were hemp, and that's no longer the case. We have, you know, nylon and other synthetics now. But that was the traditional use. But now, of course, with advances in engineering, we see a lot more industrial uses on the horizon that we may not even know about, but things involved in construction and forming bodies for car parts and insulation. A lot of things where maybe hemp is only part of the structure, but it's a significant part and can be used that way.
When we're talking about 5,000 different uses, I think that there may be some people who have a hard time getting their head around that. Are there other crops that have that many uses?
Not that I know of. I think, getting back to kind of the phone call, I don't think people here in Pennsylvania are arguing that we can grow hemp and that we can use it effectively for quite a number of different products that were out there. In fact, you know, you mentioned Canada earlier. I think we import like $76 million worth of products from Canada to create products here that we can sell legally in the U.S. So there's a huge Canadian market for this. Why don't we just have it become an American market? And I think that's what a lot of people think. But we also want to make sure, again, they're making right decisions. You talk about, well, if you grow hemp as a farmer, well, then you're not growing something else. It's not like you have extra spare land to just grow. So you want to make sure that when you do grow properly grow a crop, you have someone to buy it, and they have a use for it. And there's infrastructure in place to do something with the crops that we are building, you know, processing facilities. You talked about different types of harvesting. Make sure that maybe there's a new piece of equipment that can be done that's very specific to a certain type of hemp. There's all of these things that are out there. So I think there's a lot of positives. We have to be cautious, but we have to be really optimistic, too. And it takes people taking some risks as well. So it's more complicated than just hemp is great. Let's everybody grow hemp. But I think there's great opportunities there, and there's money to be made. And a lot of farmers we mentioned, they're looking to increase income after 4 or 5 years of consecutive losses in crops that they're growing now.
You know, we've often talked about the situation, the challenges that dairy farmers are facing in this state. I mean, I'd hate to think that there will be – well, we know the reality is that there are dairy farmers that are – leaving the dairy industry, and if they continue to farm, they're going to other crops or other products. Is this something that could be – I mean, I know the answer is yes, but I mean, how much of an option is it for Pennsylvania dairy farmers, for example?
Definitely going to be looking into it. Definitely going to be looking at an option. What you don't want, though, is every single farmer to all of a sudden be growing all this hemp and then not have a business to work with it. I mean, I even go back to about 5 to 10 years ago. You know, we have a lot of microbreweries here in Pennsylvania, and some of them wanted to get Pennsylvania-grown hops. So some farmers started growing hops, but they didn't grow hops out of the blue. They had contracts and deals with brewers before they even grew anything. They wanted to make sure they had a client because there are many different types of hops as well and different varieties that are used for beer. So they wanted to make sure they had a client. You know, our farmer, Scott Brown, you know, he obviously put some of that in for a company. Well, he got paid for that. So even if there's no whatever they found out, that's information. That's an investment. But there was no selling of anything at the end of the day. And I think he can talk about the rainy season last year was probably detrimental to a lot of growth of hemp last year in the research stage with all the rain that we had. So many different factors involved. We want to move forward. We want to be optimistic. We want to say this will help our dairy farmers and other struggling farmers. But we need to have plans in place, be realistic about the potential.
Scott, what about that? So that rain was not very helpful last year?
Not at all.
Not at all. Huh?
This is not a wet-footed crop. It cannot take the rain. We had some success stories, but for the most part, it was just a crop that we didn't harvest at all. Going back to Mark's point real quick about the farmers all jumping in, we had several meetings here last summer, and so I probably get 2 to 5 calls a week of dairy farmers wanting to know how to grow this crop and what they should be doing, and I tell them that this is not something the market is not there, you cannot jump into it, but I would also suggest you trying some. Try a little bit. It is a crop of 5,000 uses, and if you put your head to it and figure out that niche, it's going to give you a huge advantage.
So where are you selling your crop just yet?
We did not sell our crop at all.
Okay. So planning for down the road, what are you thinking?
Well, the company that I dealt with says that they're going to be putting up a processing plant here in Wyoming County.
Okay. Speaking of processing plant, news came out just yesterday that the first processing plant was approved for York County. I don't know which of you can describe this, but when you're talking about processing, I mean, the comparison I can make, maybe it's not a good one, is that oil, for example, has to be processed into gasoline and the other products that it produces. Same thing here, I assume, but what does the processing process, what does that involve?
Well, let me start with the first part, then I'll let our expert talk more about it. But I think what they're probably doing, probably the easiest product to make is the oil. So they're probably talking about the oil. And I think there's another facility.
You're talking about the CBD?
You make the CBD oil, yes. And I believe there's also a facility out in western Pennsylvania that was doing – that was processing as part of the research last year as well. So I think they're only talking about oil at this point, but the hope is then to do a bunch of other products.
Well, so let me clarify just a little bit. So those three main types I talked about, one is for the oil grain, one is for fiber, and one is for CBDs. So the oil grain is really similar to like a canola harvest. So you would harvest that mature grain, you would get it, and you would press it. And when you press it, you get the oil, but then you also get a seed cake, which can be used for feeding animals, which is not legal yet, but we anticipate that one day it will become legal.
A seed cake.
Yes. So just the leftover leavings of that pressed seed.
Okay.
And then separately, you have the oil that can be used for cooking, just like an olive oil. For our fiber, that's a whole different process. So you would have to get that out of the field. That fiber needs to go through what's called decortication. And the way it used to be done is you leave that fiber in the field for a couple of weeks. It gets weathered, microbes work on it, and start to break down that fiber. And then after that, you take it and you can pull it apart and get the different components of the fiber. Now we're looking at using engineering to kind of skip that step, get it out of the field, and pull apart the parts of that fiber in a plant. And or a processing plant, I should clarify. Then the CBD type plant, you actually will harvest the entire plant and let it dry. And so that kind of positions it well for tobacco farmers who might be looking to get into a different crop, because you need storage area for that to dry and you need to keep it at the right humidity and temperature.
So otherwise, kind of like tobacco?
Similar to tobacco. All that's right. So the curing of tobacco. And then after that, you would send that to a processing plant and they would extract the CBD oils and other components if they wanted to do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, that can be more labor intensive, too, then. So then have, you know, do you have enough labor to do that type of work? That's why a lot of the tobacco growing, and there's still tobacco growing in Lancaster County, you know, that's a very labor intensive thing. And whether farms and farm families are set up to do that, that's something else they have to consider. I guess the seed cake, that's going to be the new avocado toast. but that also raises another part of stuff that may need to be regulated or legislated, because if some of the things are being used for food, then the FDA will still have to give approval for that. There also would be rules where, let's say, a farmer wants to feed a hemp product to his animal, and then like beef cattle, and then he wants to, you know, create steaks out of that, well, then there would be approval for that, too. So, again, everything has not been green-lighted yet. So, again, we optimistically proceed with caution.
So I'm assuming that the advertisement for that beef doesn't say grass-fed?
We may get hemp-fed. Soon, maybe in the future, we will have hemp-fed beef.
Hemp-fed,
and that'll be what everyone, you know, pay the premium for that as well.
Before we get to we have a couple of emails here, but I want to clarify something. We've talked about CBD, and that's the oil, and it's a chemical compound. But what is that used for, just so everyone knows what we're talking about when we describe that CBD oil? What is it?
So cannabidiol, or CBD, is one of the chemical components of the plant. THC is another possible chemical component of the plant. In industrial hemp, it's only allowed to be 0.3% in that plant. Otherwise, the crop has to be destroyed. There are other chemical components as well that we may also become interested in the future. But right now, CBD has a marketing cachet, I would say, in our consumer products. And so folks are interested in using this as nutraceuticals, kind of an essential oil. So this has been added to different products. Some folks use it just as a straight, like with a dropper. You can put a few drops under your tongue, and people claim health benefits. There has not been a lot of clinical research done on this yet.
Not FDA approved?
It is. Actually, CBD is in a newly approved FDA drug.
Okay.
So Epidiolex has been approved for seizures in certain types of epilepsy. And so because of that, it's a little bit complicated to see how the regulations will fall out in the future for this component of the hemp plant.
See, I think as you're listening to the conversation, our audience, you can hear that there are a lot of relationships, if you will. I mean, THC is the chemical that creates the high in marijuana if it's above a certain level here. So there's still THC as part of hemp, but it has to be below that 0.3%, correct? Okay, so that's one thing. But you were just saying about epilepsy and seizures for the CBD oil. We know that medical marijuana was finally approved here in Pennsylvania and across the country in most of the states in this state. So a lot of these things seem to have some relationship, right?
That's right. And so it makes it a little bit complicated for people to
understand. I know, I was thinking
that
too, yeah.
And so people have a lot of questions, and there's not a great deal of clarity until you get a program like this who can sit down with you.
And there are a lot of questions that still need to be answered as we move through the process.
We have a listener to ask, how much of the plant is usable and how much is waste? How is the waste disposed of?
So depending on what type of plant you're growing, for what market use, the whole plant can be used. There are varieties that can do dual purpose as a fiber plant and a seed plant. And then even those varieties that are just being used for CBDs, most of that plant is used. You either pull it up or cut it off at the base, and you can extract CBD from the entire plant, but the highest concentration is in that floral material before that plant goes to seed.
Scott, what are you doing with your waste?
This year, it's staying in the field.
It's staying in the field?
So, yep. Yes, it'll be returned to the soil.
Do you see that as a fertilizer?
Absolutely, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Had another question here from a listener. Wanted to talk about patents and monopolies. Will there be a grow for seedability, or will it fall prey to monopolies through patenting that other crops have suffered under? Is it too soon to tell?
I don't know that we have a definitive answer for that. I think that a lot of stuff is going to come down to the things I hate to be Debbie Downer, but there are, again, going to be some regulations or laws passed at the federal level, and then implementation, how they do it in Pennsylvania. You know, certainly Department of Agriculture has been very open and honest in promoting, you know, this great potential as well, and we appreciate that. But depending on how some of the regulations are written, there could be issues there. I mean, I guess theoretically some company could come up with the most unique different way to use a hemp and try to get a patent, but I don't know. I think it's a lot of questions.
Okay, but just to clarify what the listener is talking about, are there monopolies on seeds for some products?
Not for...
I don't know of any.
No, not that I know of. I see this going in a couple of different ways. So, for instance, the CBD sector... there will be a few companies that probably invest in breeding certain varieties that are very high in CBDs. And this is difficult, and that will make that seed very valuable. And so they will probably spend some time and money in order to optimize those varieties for certain areas of the country. And then because we're warning farmers, hey, you should probably get into a contract with someone so that you know you will be paid for this crop when you grow it, that opens up the opportunity for them to develop relationships with farmers where maybe a company provides the seed, and then that farmer grows the seed, and then the company sends out a custom operator to harvest and bring in that material to someone they've contracted with to process the material. And so that probably does lend itself to some level of vertical integration just through the agreements that will work out and be the most efficient for that crop. But then I see another sector maybe developing as a really interesting organic market. We don't have any pesticides that we're allowed to use on this crop because it, you know, basically hasn't existed in, as a crop for a very long time. So there's no EPA-approved pesticides. And so we're already doing this essentially organically. And a lot of the end users are that consumer group that's interested in organic products. And so that might be another sector that develops more, I hate to use the word, organically, but it will lend itself toward maybe seed sharing and developing in more of a homegrown type of development of varieties.
And the government would have to jump in and do whether it's certified organic or not as well.
Mm. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News. And all things regional, I'm Scott Lamar. Listen tomorrow for Smart Talk as we discuss a shortage of police officers. You can also visit our website to get an outlook of conversations that we're working on. Plus, you can leave a voicemail or voice memo question for one of our upcoming programs. More information is at WITF.org/smarttalk. We're talking about industrial hemp. Got the go-ahead as part of the 2018 Farm Bill. Our guest today, Dr. Alyssa Collins, is Director of Penn State Extension Southeast Agricultural Research and Extension Center. Mark O'Neill, Director of Media and Strategic Communications with the Pennsylvania Farm Bureau. And hemp grower Scott Brown of Brown Hill Farms in Wyoming County. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. On Twitter, we are at Smart Talk WITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a phone call from Dave in Lemoyne. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, a couple of short questions. I have a product in, that I've been using for a long time in my home, or a couple products, actually. One is twine, and the other is what we used to call hemp rope, bull rope. Are they made of hemp?
Twine made of hemp. Let's start with that question first.
Is bull rope and twine, are they made of hemp? I always assumed they were, but I don't know if they were or not.
Dr. Collins is thinking about this. I can describe her right now. She's looking toward the ceiling. I can tell she's deep in thought. Since it's radio, I have to describe that.
Well, I know that twine can be made of hemp. I don't know if it's exclusively made of hemp. But hemp has been able to be used for many years here in the United States, even though we weren't allowed to grow it. So very likely, yes.
It was coming from...
That would mean that it wasn't produced... I mean, the hemp comes from South America or something, or if it is made of hemp? Or,
it probably came from Canada or Europe or China.
Okay, but you could import something that was already... that was grown somewhere else. Is that correct?
That's right.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Another thing was that... there's a product called jute. Is there any relation between jute and hemp that you know of?
What is jute?
Well, if you've ever seen any old prison movies, they used to have jute mills in prisons. And it was, I assume it was something to make, maybe burlap is made from jute? I'm not sure. But I always was curious about that. But I guess that there's no relation. I don't know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your call. You had some good questions here. What's jute? Does anyone know?
I've seen jute rugs at Pier 1.
Okay.
So maybe we should call them.
Beyond my area of expertise.
Scott, what were we going to say?
I looked it up. It says an herbaceous plant, which is cultivated for jute fiber.
Yep, see? You know, you being at home, there's an advantage to this because you could look it up while we're doing this.
Right.
Scott, I did have a few questions for you as we're having this conversation. Did you have to purchase any special equipment to grow hemp?
I did not.
You did not?
We had all the equipment. Now, I did make a special plate for one of my corn planters that could take the small seed. But besides that, no, I did not have to purchase anything special.
Dr. Collins mentioned that there has not been a pesticide that has been approved for use on growing hemp at this point. Did you have any issues with insects, with weeds, invasive species?
Weeds were the biggest problem, especially because of the rain last year. The plant is supposed to come out of the ground fast, and the way we planted it, we were looking for the crop to shade the ground. So we planted at pretty high populations, and it came out of the ground in probably 2 days, three at the most. It was a very quick germinator.
Mm.
But then the cloudy and the rain prevented it from growing as fast as it needed to, and so the weeds were able to take over.
How would you, if there's not a pesticide to control the weeds, how would you take care of that?
Well, you really have to get a crop established quickly, or if you're going to do rows that you could mechanically cultivate, that is an option.
Hmm. We have a listener question asked, how is the crop planted and harvested? Scott, I'll turn to you for that one.
Well, again, it depends on the end use. It really depends on the end use. For seed, we combined some of it for seed. We did 8 acres with a conventional combine. It worked fine, worked really good. If you're going to process the hemp for fibers, the hemp is actually supposed to lay in the field, and it kind of naturally, it's not decorcates, but can't think of the word. It
redding.
Naturally breaks down, and then you harvest it, and then it can be processed. For the CBD, it's manual. It's just like tobacco.
You know, okay, speaking of which, I have to tell you, Mark, that when you were describing this, when you were talking about it drying in the barn and tobacco, I thought of Amish farmers. Is this a crop that maybe Amish farmers would be interested in because there is that tobacco process that they have?
Absolutely. I think farmers across the state right now are looking at all different means to potentially drive revenue. And certainly the Amish farmers are doing probably most of the tobacco that's being grown in Pennsylvania. There is a huge part of that is focused right in Lancaster County. That's where most of the tobacco in Pennsylvania is grown right now. And it is a labor-intensive area. A lot of times you have to have specific barns set up after you manually harvest the leaves and you hang them up there, and it takes a long time. So there's a lot involved with that, and you need to have the labor and the patience to do that. And certainly, the Amish community, I would think it could be a natural for them if, again, they see that it potentially would be a moneymaker.
Well, I have to admit that when you talked about it being labor-intensive, that the Amish farm family gets involved in a lot of the labor, and that's one of the visions I had in my mind. Let's take a phone call from Sarah in Carlisle. Has a little bit of a history lesson for us. Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I have to kind of chuckle. Hemp is not at all hard to raise. At least it wasn't in the Midwest. We were trying to get rid of it so we could have corn. But the bit of history is that I was from Lexington, Missouri growing up, and we had one of the first battles of the Civil War in the border state there, and it was called the Battle of the Hemp Fields, because the one side fighting up the hill were hiding behind the hemp bales, rolling them up the hill as the other side was shooting down at them toward the Missouri River.
So the hemp bales are thick enough that they would stop a bullet?
Well, I guess it was more for the hiding. I don't know how many bullets it stopped. Because there's still a museum there, and there's the blood on the floor from both sides because they used that Anderson family's big old brick house for the hospital for both sides of the conflict.
I had never heard of the Battle of Hemp Bales.
Every once in a while, they have a reenactment of the Battle of the Hemp Bales.
But
they were big. I think they were like, they rolled up, like you have the hay bales.
Yeah.
I think they were pretty big.
But I want to go back to something you said, that in the Midwest, you were trying to get rid of hemp?
Yes.
Why?
Well, because... when marijuana got popular, it was supposedly very poor quality for that. But it was encroaching on our corn crop, and we had to chop it back, and there would be some in the field, you know, that you had to get rid of so you could plant your corn. And so we were, so I'm laughing about it because my father could, if he lived long enough, he could have made plenty of money on hemp.
He was ahead of his time. Hey, Sarah, thank you very much, but a lot of good information there. Something that I'm sure there are a lot of people who are thinking about this. When you look at this plant, from a distance, it does look like marijuana. How are we to stop the commingling of growing marijuana and hemp? I mean, eventually, now we know that there is a move, whether it be here in Pennsylvania, but across the country, to legalize marijuana for recreational purposes. Part of that would be that you would legally be able to grow marijuana. But that's a few years down the road, if it happens at all. But how are you to stop the commingling of marijuana and hemp?
So one of the issues with this crop is that they look very similar, and in fact, they can cross-pollinate. So because of that, the state has put very specific regulations on how close industrial hemp fields can be to marijuana grow locations, which are all indoors, controlled climate.
For medicinal purposes now.
That's correct. So, of course, there is a risk that someone is going to get the idea to go out into your hemp field and plant an illicit plant of marijuana. But they will probably be very disappointed because the industrial hemp will pollinate first, and it will dilute the potency of the marijuana plant that they're trying to grow. So it's not a great deal for them.
Mm. Let's take a phone call from Brett in York. Brett, you're on the air. Hello, Brett. Well, Brett had a question here. Actually had two questions. The question of monopolization. Were you talking about copyright seed? And two, does climate change affect the growing of hemp in Pennsylvania as seasons change?
Well, again, those are questions I think we don't necessarily know the answers to. I mean, that's something we're going to have to see what happens in the future. And, you know, there, as Scott mentioned, you know, some of the just having an incredibly wet year last year affected, you know, whether the crop was any good. There may be many other factors. You know, as you mentioned with the, you know, Dr. Collins mentioned about even the different soils for different types of things. There are so many different factors right now. And that's why, even though it's been quote unquote legalized, we see great value in continuing a lot of the research on all of this.
You know, one of the things that our previous caller mentioned was how easy it is to grow hemp because it was a weed. And it was a weed, but that kind of perpetuates the myth that you can just throw this in a field and it'll grow great and you don't have to do anything to it. And to some extent, that is the case. But if you would like to make money off this crop, which most farmers do, you do have to treat it like a crop. It does like to get fertilizer. It does have certain needs in terms of how much water it needs and how much water is too much. There are pests. There are diseases. So all of that is something that we are going to have to manage, and we're going to have to monitor and adapt as the climate changes. And that is the same for hemp, just as it is for every other crop we grow.
What about the environment? You just mentioned fertilizer. What about the environment? Are there impacts on the environment of growing this product?
Not beyond what we would typically expect of any other crop. The one issue that comes up for me is Pennsylvania has moved towards no-till agriculture, which is great, and it conserves moisture. It means that we get to build good soil structure. However, because we don't have herbicides available for this crop, that means we have to till. And tilling does bring some risk of erosion, of moisture loss, of nutrient loss. And so that is a drawback here. And some folks who have been no-tillers for a very long time will have to break their no-till in order to really effectively grow this crop.
Mm-hmm. I no-till, and I did not till for last year's crop.
Okay. And so when you ended up doing the work that you did in this crop, do you think that your no-till is going to be successful in those years where it's really wet like this year, or do you think sometimes it might work and sometimes not?
And Scott, I have to kind of hurry you along because I only have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, I think it's fine because I there's another grower here that does tillage, and we had a pretty well equal crop, and last year was the wettest year I hope we ever see.
Well, yeah, you and me both. Let's wrap it up at this point, but learned a lot today. Our guest, Mark O'Neill from Pennsylvania Farm Bureau, Dr. Alyssa Collins from Penn State, hemp grower Scott Brown, Brown Hill Farms in Wyoming County. Thank all of you for being with us today. Coming up on tomorrow's program, we talk about the shortage of police officers across the country and here in Central PA.